You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of November 30th, 2016, and welcome to our new fan cast show, BT and Me. It's Titanfall 2.
We need a theme song. BT and Me. Butter. Podcast. I'm George Alborn.
My name is Scott Juster.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorless conversation about video games. We're talking about Titanfall 2 today. Mm-hmm. We're going to drop in, if you will. Is that what happens?
Yeah, they drop.
Titanfall.
Titans are very similar to the base. I like to drop them.
I see how it is. This is the latest from Respawn Entertainment, formerly known as Infinity Ward, who, I mean, it is, right? Like 90%
well,
of
what's
the,
his face? Zampella.
Zampella, yeah.
What's the other guy's
name? A lot of the staff left and joined Respawn.
Yeah, there's a fair amount.
I don't know
amount.
How many have stuck around from Titanfall 1 to Titanfall 2.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the much-anticipated sequel to Titanfall. The game that was an E3 hit a couple years ago, everyone loved it until the game came out, and then everybody stopped loving it for some reason. It was one of the weirder anomalies of that year, because while all the critics said the game was excellent, and we enjoyed
the game
it
was excellent.
Immensely,
yeah.
It was not a super high-selling title, which, funnily enough, is kind of true of Titanfall 2 as well. So this is a debrief, so we're going to have a general conversation probably about the gameplay elements, some of the multiplayer as well, in terms of what we really appreciate it. But this Titanfall also has a story, which is new. And so we will get into spoiler territories. And I do think that the campaign has some of the most interesting content in Titanfall 2.
Yes.
So definitely worth not spoiling yourself if you're going to pick up this game.
And if you haven't played it yet, I would say that even if you're not going to play any of the multiplayer, you should play the single player.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
worth it to someone who doesn't even really like shooters that much.
Absolutely. Yeah. So to kick us off a little bit, when I was first starting to play this game, so this is maybe the first hour or so, I actually thought this is kind of humdrum. I was not especially into it, right?
Yeah.
So there are, how many Titans are in Titanfall 2? Six?
Oh, there's like six or seven.
When you first
each get, with different loadouts
each with different loadouts, and some of them vary quite a bit. There's one that deals like fire, which I think is pretty fun from a multiplayer perspective. There's a lot more zone control in this game as opposed to just sort of going ham and going into the fray. I only have a little bit of experience with the multiplayer, but from my experience of it, it felt like when you're getting in Titan battles, they were less one-sided. Like, if I were to meet another Titan on the field and we were to get into a fight, right? I feel like I might, even if I kill that Titan, I'm probably going to go down in, like, 10 seconds from a pilot who shoots me with a laser beam, or maybe I accidentally walk over a trip mine or whatever.
Yeah.
Is that how you felt when you were playing multiplayer? Did you feel like the Titan combat was similar to some of the Titan combat from the previous game?
I think things feel a little more nimble. Like, I feel like things...
like, faster. You move around the map faster and stuff?
Not necessarily just faster, because there were Titans in the first game where you had three dashes. And that's not really the case in this one, but they're...
You don't... And correct me if I'm wrong, but so in the campaign... Minor spoiler for the campaign. There is a Titan that can literally fly. You never get that Titan in Titanfall, right? Fuck, I was so bummed.
So,
you can't play that guy in multiplayer.
There's like this creeping anime into Titanfall.
There's a Titan that has a fucking samurai sword.
Yeah, and it's called Ronin. So, I mean, there's something about the new Titans that is a bit more cartoonish and less...
when you say cartoony, you mean like Voltron-esque, right?
Yeah.
Even in the campaign, all of the Titans come with this like weird caricatured like wrestling supervillain, and they have these weird intros where it's like Jessica, and it's like metal blares, and you see like the Titan open up, and Jessica's wearing like 30 wolf pelts or something.
So here's my grand unified theory of mecha.
Okay, sweet.
So there's like two schools of thought. One is like mech warrior, which is like these are walking
big,
tanks.
Bulky tanks, yes.
And the other is like Gundam. Yeah. Which is like, these are basically robot ninjas.
Or like Evangelion.
Yeah.
Like a very humanoid-esque.
Exactly.
Mecha.
Like, yeah. It's either...
Well, where do you fall on the line?
I mean, either way is fine, but you have to know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. And Titanfall 1...
What you're literally getting into.
It was like, you were... It was like a tank. Like, right. You were walking around and there was a weight.
Ka-chunk, yeah.
The scale got a lot of good Foley work happening here. The scale of the Titans in this game feels a bit smaller.
Interesting.
Like, the Titans feel shorter. The shapes of them are a bit more streamlined and human-like rather than tank-like.
I mean, there are a few exceptions, right? Like, the Scorcher Titan feels pretty big.
But even then, he's kind of rounder. You know, like, he
feels like a boxer in Titan form, as opposed to like an actual sort of mobile tank.
And so I'm not saying it's bad or good. It's just, it makes the game feel a bit, to me, it just felt a bit more like kind of arcadey in a weird way.
Yeah.
Like, there's just more novelty weapons, where there's a flamethrower, or there's a sword that shoots out a pulse beam, or like, you know, all your Titans have some sort of crazy core activity that their chest
laser
opens
beam
up.
Is pretty fucking cool. So when you were playing multiplayer, did you feel like the depth there was appreciable? Like, could you when you saw a landscape, say for example you just got a Titan and you were playing the regular Titan, and you see a Scorcher and like a Ronin Titan coming up to you, do you feel like you have the tools in your toolbox to deal with each class of Titan in a different way, or did they feel like they merged together into sort of just a big messy Titan battle?
I think to me that the stages mattered a lot. Some stages were way more open, and some of them were way more like building and cover based.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of cool if you saw the Scorcher, you could be like, well, I'm just going to chase him around this building because he needs a line of sight to do his thing.
Right. So you would like cheese the...
Yeah, I mean, like I played 80 hours, maybe close to 100 hours of Titanfall 1.
Yeah.
And I, you know, played like maybe a dozen hours or something of Titanfall 2 multiplayer. So like I can't speak with like that much experience to it, but it does feel different. Other than the small but meaningful like mechanical and time based changes that they made to it.
Could you put in 80 hours into Titanfall 2 multiplayer?
I would have to do it on the PC because I played on the PS4 and like it was just kind of like, ugh, this is not ideal.
Yeah.
But I don't know. One of the things I was thinking about, and this is like a more meta critique of the game, is like, I think maybe it's just a short-term thing, but perhaps Overwatch has ruined first-person shooters for me.
Where's my monkey? Where's May when you need her?
I think, well, and
is it like charm? Is that?
It's not charm. It's actual mechanics. It's like when I opened up Titanfall and I was like, oh my God, everything is a fucking progression unlock. Mm-hmm. Every single goddamn thing. Like every gun has an unlock progression.
From the minds that brought you Call of Duty.
Yeah. And I mean, and which is fine. And some people really like that. But from moment one, I was being killed with guns I could not wield.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I don't know if I can do this anymore. Like, I don't know if this is where my headspace is at.
Sure.
You know, like, however, like, it is, like, finely tuned multiplayer. Like, just the way the weapons work, the way that the stages kind of set up interesting, like, shenanigans that you can get into.
Oh, and there are shenanigans.
Like, the wall running. Like, it's amazing.
So I haven't done this myself, but I was talking to my nephew about this. But apparently, so you could use I never used the grappling hook much. It didn't feel like a tool that I was especially skilled at.
Mm.
But one of the implements you can use is a grappling hook. And my understanding is that you can grappling hook to something, let go to sort of send yourself flying, almost like Widowmaker style. Then turn around, and you will have like jetpacks on your back, so you'll land on your back and like slide while you're shooting your gun.
Yeah.
Like the movement of the pilots in particular has probably never felt better between these two games.
Yeah.
And it just feels really good to be running around in a pilot. Like, it feels more fluid.
Well, they also fixed it. That's the other thing.
Like, so how was it broken in...
So in the beta, the open alphas and betas, like, they had messed with the movement speed, and they had messed with the acceleration of what happens when you're actually wall running.
Right.
And they basically changed it back into the old way.
Ah, interesting. So, like, I mean, so this is fascinating, because in my mind, when people do betas, like open betas like this, I always think... Well, what are the odds of them changing anything?
Yeah.
Like, this is just a server test, not a mechanics test.
Mm-hmm.
So to hear, like, oh, they actually learned a lesson and finally tuned something, even in a potentially dramatic way, is actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, and, I mean, I guess, I feel like these, like, Respawn occupies a strange space, like, that's different from something like Call of Duty, because it is, like, smaller scale, but still with the same, like, insane attention to detail. And it's kind of cool that, like, oh, wow, they actually do listen to people and they care about this stuff. Like, one of the other things was, like, one of the greatest things about Titanfall was, like, it was ahead of its time in that it was the MOBAization of the first-person shooter.
Right.
And now, look, every single fucking first-person shooter that comes out has some sort of MOBA element in it, even Halo.
Right.
And so, like, there was always a timer. It's like, okay, how long until Titanfall happens? That's your ultimate. When you're in a Titan, how long until you get, like, an ultimate, or how long, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's always a timer happening. And in the alpha and beta, they took away a lot of those timers. And it sucked. It was boring. It was like, well, now this just feels a lot more like Call of Duty. And they changed that stuff too.
Right.
So now they added in most, but not all, of the timers, which I think is to its detriment. So I think it's weird. Like, I think the rules of the multiplayer are actually worse. Like, just the flat out, like, how the game functions on a bare mechanical level. But things like the movement and the shooting and the sounds and the stages are, like, outstanding.
Right.
Yeah, it's a weird combo. Like, it's not a full step forward to me, just because that first game was, it's like damn hard to improve on that first game.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me because I feel like the expectations for this game were so, it was just so weird, right?
Yeah.
Because Titanfall 1 was pretty widely accepted as a
it's like the closest you can get to a AAA critical darling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, but still fail pretty dramatically.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, the long-term player base.
Mm.
So what they were going to do with the second one was, like, in both of our minds, I believe, was, like, look, they can't really fuck this up.
Yeah.
All they have to do is, like, do more Titanfall and have any story, really, because people were complaining about the story.
Yep.
And I think that they took that mandate, and Respawn actually kind of knocked it out of the park, because it didn't feel like a game that they sat on, right? It felt like they genuinely thought, okay, how can we make this better, and then made it better, right? And maybe now's a good time to start moving towards the story, but there's no reason in my mind this story for Titanfall 2, this campaign, is as good as it is. Like, it didn't have to be this good to sell probably as much as they're selling now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's legitimately, like, one of the best first-person shooter campaigns I've played in years.
Yep.
And that's pretty phenomenal. It's pretty cool to see that happen.
Yeah.
And it's funny too, because they did what they needed to do from the very first game, right? Which is, it was missing character. There was a lot of these characters that just were completely uninteresting.
Mm.
Well, there's not many of them in the Titanfall campaign.
Mm.
Like, BT as a sort of intelligent AI robot, and Cooper, they do all right for themselves.
They do.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's cool that they actually, like, saw all of the issues that first game had and then could just completely address them.
Yeah. Yeah. Before we talk about single player, there's a couple more things that I think actually are super smart about the multiplayer, like the network.
So explain this to me. So I never left the network that I was defaulted in.
But
so the way that it looks like to me is that there are a bunch of different, like, almost private servers that I can join and exclusively play with those people.
It's basically like priority queuing. Like, if you
So I can queue up with everybody, but it favors people in that group.
Right.
Okay.
And so you can, you know, you favor, you basically can create groups.
Because in the beta, we saw a lot of Harambes.
There's still a lot of Harambes.
Okay. Of course.
But there are things like the person who owns the group gets to determine a happy hour. And happy hour is when you get extra XP for playing.
Oh, no way. Yeah. That's so cool.
And so, like, there's just these, like, really smart things about, like, how you set up a multiplayer match, who you play with, how it gets people to play at the same time.
Which Harambe group did you join?
There's just so many. There's like, it's like the real Harambe.
How many weed references are there?
A lot of weed references. Yeah. A lot of Harambe references. A lot of Harambe weed references.
Oh, really? Okay, good. The best of both worlds.
And then like the Giant Bomb crew has like the second largest.
Yeah, I know. It's like Giant Bomb and IGN and Kotaku had some. Yeah.
But like that sort of stuff is just super smart, the way that they do that, and the way that they have playlists going, and they have a little bit of something for everyone. There's just like this studio like knows multiplayer like so well.
The idea of having a group like that too is really smart, because it's kind of what Destiny tried to do in a way. Because Destiny, little known fact, they had guilds. Like you could join a sort of guild and raiding group. It didn't have that same level of functionality, but there's certainly a time and a place, especially when you're talking about a genre that is so full of like toxic and harassing players, to be able to favor a group of people that you think are actually genuinely cool.
Yeah. And I mean, they have said that unlike the first game, which they messed up because they sold maps and that split the player base, like they said that maps are going to be free. DLC is going to be like cosmetic stuff, so and I've already seen motherfuckers with like a pink rail gun or whatever.
Joke, one of the first things I did in multiplayer was look at the skins. Some of them are fucking sweet, and it comes to a point where it's like, man, I just want to exclusively play this one Titan I can get some sweet skin. Like a Mercy Witch skin, but for my Titan. That's what I want.
There's just a lot of clever things about it. And I could see someone putting in an insane amount of hours if they were fine with some of the changes mechanically that they made to Titans and stuff, which I don't like, but whatever. Like that's that's an opinion thing.
Sure.
Okay. So single player,
campaign time. So spoilers for Titanfall 2 up ahead. We've already said it. You
should definitely play the campaign.
So BT is a badass robot. When this game first started, like I thought there was a lot of humor in this, right? Because Cooper's always like, "Hey BT, like what's the deal with that like weird bug thing?"
Yeah.
And BT is like, "That is a insect of B class variety, you know, whatever, right?" Yeah. It's very like robotic. They never really stopped doing that.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of going. The shtick the entire game. I thought that would grate on me.
Yeah.
But it didn't actually end up. I felt like overall I was like, this is pretty cool. I'm not quite sure it ever got to the level of like loving this AI the way that I love R2-D2 or like the short circuit robot, right? Like it's not, there's a relationship that grows between BT and Cooper, but from BT's perspective, he still feels like a robot for most of the game.
And I think the reason why is that they stuck with it.
Yeah.
Like, they kept him as the straight man the entire...
Totally.
The entire
game. In one of the final scenes, Lastimos is like, well, time to get you a real pilot, because it's Cooper. And BT, instead of like, no, I like Cooper, he's like, but Lastimos, me and Cooper have a 95% like gel rating or whatever. Yeah. Like, okay, cool, they're drift compatible.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make it seem like you guys are, like, friendly, you know?
I was listening to the Idle Thumbs podcast, and they were saying that the guy who was the director for this,
Steve Fukuda,
he's
an AI.
Well, he's secretly one of the best first person game designers, like,
oh, really?
Going back to the Medal of Honor days,
really,
like in the campaigns and stuff.
Oh.
He was I think either the lead or one of the lead level designers of Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare.
Oh wow.
So like this guy has like,
he knows this shit.
He knows what the fuck he's doing. Like
So this is great, because this is basically a name that's going into my brain.
Yeah.
Because next time I see it on a title, I'm just gonna be like, that campaign's gonna be fucking sweet.
Yeah. And like there was just so many moments where it did kind of feel like those Modern Warfare moments where it's like, wow, this is a crazy set piece, but also I'm interacting with it and not just looking at it. Yeah.
It didn't feel programmed in that way.
Yeah.
I mean, the game, I think, is really artfully done in terms of its pacing of switching you from being a pilot to a Titan.
Because
every time I'm like, oh man, I'm really enjoying this pilot stuff, this is awesome, then it moves me to a Titan scene, and I'm like, oh right, being a Titan is fucking cool. And then right before the Titan stuff overstays its welcome, I'm back to being a pilot again. And it doesn't feel super, like, weirdly put together, yeah. right? I think generally the story
it's also short enough to be like, okay, this is a contained,
right? Exactly,
5 hour thing or something.
But like, there's a one of the first scenes, and they do it a couple times, but they drop you into like a Titan battle where there are dozens of Titans, and shit is just crazy, and everything is blowing up, and you're like rushing, and you were like jamming your fist into other Titans, and it feels like you're a badass, but you're still part of this larger war, which is a difficult thing to do, right? Because when you have a large-scale battle like that, you don't want all of these Titans to suddenly turn and just ace you and kill you, because that would be bad. But you also don't want them to stand there looking like set dressing, because then it feels fake.
Yep.
So instead, you have to have the character be in what feels like an actual battle. I think one of the ways they do that is by giving you an objective that's like, hey, you need to get to this fucking objective now, and you can kind of ignore the stuff around you, which is very much the Call of Duty method of directing your personal flow.
Before it got to the point of like, follow me, Ramirez. You know, like, you're not following someone. It's just like, here is a point, and you know, if you ever forget it, you can press the button and it'll show you where to go. But and it's also the way you get there is interesting. Like, it, strangely enough, the single player is actually a pretty good training ground for the multiplayer. Like, it introduces you to every single Titan loadout. Yep. It introduces you to the concept
and the way
of
you need
like
to RP is that Titan.
It introduces you to like the idea of you can wall run, but there's different ways of doing it. Like, you can let yourself slide down the wall and then jump. You need to double jump in some areas. I mean, there's just a lot of different moves that it puts you through. And it does it, you know, you can start seeing in the multiplayer maps, oh, right, it would be actually really useful to wall run really high up here.
Totally,
or wall run fairly low to the ground.
Yeah.
And it's just smart in that way.
The comparisons for the pilot sequences in the campaign I saw a lot online, we're comparing Titanfall 2 to Portal.
Yeah.
Which, and Mirror's Edge, those were the two titles I saw in comparison. And at first I was like, bullshit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how does that make any sense?
Yeah.
They're absolutely apt. And I think some of the best sequences are the like crazy puzzle platforms where you look at it, and in the Portal fashion, right? Like, you look at the structure of it, and you understand it. Like, okay, here's what I think that I have to do as a pilot.
Mm.
Then, in the Mirror's Edge context, you perform it, and you perform it right the first time, and holy shit, it feels so good.
Yeah.
Like, there's a sequence, I think it's about in the middle of the game, where Cooper has to go basically get like another power cell, and there's these huge fans that are like, blowing wind
and
stuff.
That was a fun sequence,
And it's this crazy roundabout sequence where you end up circling through this entire structure back to where you started before to deliver this battery pack.
Yeah.
And the whole way you had to sort of open these walls and then avoid the wind so you don't get blown back to where you started from. And then in the super fun way, the very last sequence is you let yourself get blown by the wind and sort of zoom past this huge arena across these walls.
And you're wall running while
you're
getting
blown.
The
whole time. Yeah, like, it's so rad. And it's a huge environment that you experience because of the speed of pilot maneuvering.
Yeah.
And maybe like 5 to 10 seconds is that whole sequence. But it feels so satisfying, and it's such a cool level design that like you get through that and you just sort of, you almost sort of laugh to yourself about how fun it was, because it's just so well put together, and it's in an understandable way, right?
Yep.
It's almost like navigating through like a really well put together Lego puzzle or something.
Mm-hmm. There was another game that I was thinking about as I was playing it, and I don't know if people have made this comparison yet, but there were certain stages that felt a lot like Super Mario Galaxy.
Oh, interesting.
Where there was strange gravitational things happening, but the other like larger reason why it reminded me of the Galaxy games was that there were entire levels where it would introduce like a wild new mechanic, and then you'd never see it again for the entire game.
Yeah.
And which is like a classic Mario move of like, hey, we're going to introduce a level where there's a Goomba in a shoe, and you're going to mess around with it and have a great time. It will never come back.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's just like a massive amount of like unique ideas that they fully realize in the levels, but then they move on to the next unique idea.
Yeah. The scene in particular, and I think this you'll probably know which one I'm talking about, because it was, in my opinion, the best scene, and it was in this set piece that I was just like, holy shit, this game is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
You get the ability to travel between two dimensions in time.
when it said press L1 to time travel, and I was like, whoa,
I was like, what?
This game's going places now.
This, I kind of wish that like they would sell just this moment for like $10, because it's so fucking good in so many ways. Like, they create a really novel way of storytelling in a first-person shooter because you're traveling through a different time period, and you're in the facility, and the facility is the, when you're first in it in real time is like a disaster zone, and then you teleport back in time and it's fine and it's still there, and so you can sort of see the story of how this facility breaks down in real time. You also see the sort of digital shadow of this person who was there before you talking and explaining things, so it's not a ton of exposition because you're participating in the environment that it's happening. And then they're like, okay, this cool time travel shit that was mostly a story mechanic, we're now going to have you use it in a first-person shooter mechanic. And it is so fucking good. And it reminded me actually of like Ikaruga. Because it did something that I'd never seen before, right? So the scene in particular that shone out to me was there's a facility, and in the current time, you're fighting these like large leopard beasts, and like five jump out of a vent. So, and the way that these beasts attack you is like melee strike, and they flank you, and they're very quick. And so they'll come up to you. And then in the other time period that you're in, it's a shooter, and you're a room full of bad guys, and they're taking cover, and they're being strategic with where they're at. And when you are jumping back and forth in between time, but every time you're in one time zone, you can sort of see the shadow of where people were in the other time zone. And you have to start thinking in two times, in three dimensions. Like, there was a moment when this huge, like, lizard leopard thing was jumping at me, and right as it was about to eat me, I clicked the time travel button, and now I'm being blasted, and I'm moving for cover. But the whole time I'm moving for cover, I'm also thinking, okay, when I go back to the other time zone, where's that leopard guy going to be? That's so good. And again, that's lasts maybe, that's one scene. It's maybe like 30 minutes long. But you could easily have an entire game that's just that time travel sort of Ikaruga style, like jumping between ways of interacting with the world, and have it stand on its own.
It's really, it was just like shockingly novel. Like, like almost every level was different, and and then after the fighting part, there's the platforming part where it's like, oh, this wall is blasted out in the future. So as I'm running on the wall, I will click back to the past, run on the wall. And then, in the past, there's a laser beam that's going to shred me. So I will click back into the future to get into, like, you're just having to do these like multiple clicks of like back and forth while you're blasting your way onto a wall and like double jumping in the air.
There was another part where it's basically like the floor's lava scene, because the whole floor was like lit on fire, and you have, because the floor is no longer there in the present time where the fire is at, you have to like let yourself almost die and then click into the present. That felt so like sci-fi-y, like classic movie scene. It was like some crazy stuff in there, and it just felt so cool. It was really neat to just be like, whoa, I'm here now. Uh-oh, there's bad guys. Better go back to the future. Oh, I can't go back to the future because the room is on fire.
I did that by accident, and then I started burning. Like, oh, God. And then I like went back.
Oh, my God. That's
and then,
so
of
cool.
course, there was a guy with a shotgun there waiting for me. You know, it's just, I don't know.
See, what I want to do is grab that guy, go back in time, and then leave him in the future.
There was just so many, there's so many cool things. I one of the other ones that that really made me think of Mario Galaxy again was the factory scene where you're inside of this weird factory creating prefab
that
houses.
That was very Portal as well.
And and like BT gets grabbed by a crane and they're like taking him away. So you're kind of chasing BT through the factory. But you're on the prefab houses that they're making, and so the crane arms are like just rotating the houses around, so you're just like kind of going in a circle of like, okay, well, that refrigerator is going to turn into a platform, so when it rotates I can jump onto that thing. It was cool.
It reminded me, actually, that scene in particular reminded me of Uncharted, because I've said it before and I'll say it again, if you can design a level that works like horizontally and vertically, that's good level design, because you have to make it, you can't fuck it up in any way, because if it doesn't work in either of them, you'll know it. And if it works in both, then you've really succeeded. And then that entire scene like eventually comes up to the surface.
And you've made it.
Like, and you've made it. And it's, you're in this like outdoor arena and you're just like, wow, that was super cool. Time to like fight in another environment that was, I moved from one to the other in a completely sort of normal way.
So mechanically great. It almost feels like they were like, well, we're going to put every single idea we have in here. And then, you know, no one can complain about, like, I don't know how anyone could complain about this single player game. Like, this is like one of the best campaigns. This is probably the best first person campaign since, like, I don't know, Black Ops or something
sure,
like that.
Yeah.
But then, like, so you also have the plot going at the same time,
yep.
which strikes me as, like, actually very, like, weirdly Metal Gear-esque. Like, there's, like, these bosses that kind of, like, yeah. come out. Like, you're fighting against these, like, really...
Oh, Ruger. Like, yeah. they all have weird accents and stuff.
Well, they're all, like, South African.
Oh, that's right. There's
and
like
so they have, you know, clearly evil, you know,
yeah.
evil South Africans. If fucking we've learned bronze. Nothing, yeah, from the old Blomkamp movies.
Yeah.
So... Tell me about the plot. Like, did you... Was it, like, at all compelling? Like, was...
I mean, I don't really know. Not really, because this is trying to tell a story that's already set in the Titanfall universe.
Yes.
Of, like, this IMC versus this these, like, rebels and stuff.
Yeah.
I think that they smartly settle that down pretty quickly, right? Mm-hmm. By leaving you here, and then it's just more of a story of
yeah.
a pilot who's not really a pilot and sort of forced to become a pilot right. and has to like stop this this time travel technology from, yeah. I guess, blowing up a planet or something,
yeah.
something evil.
Yeah.
The wider, larger story doesn't hit, I don't think. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Because it's not really their fault. They're sort of stuck in this world. The story that's actually just like about Cooper and BT, like sort of getting along, I think that works for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, Cooper's kind of a nondescript, you know, short-haired white dude, like yeah. all first-person shooter main characters yeah. are. But I don't know. I think I dug it for the most part.
Yeah. Going back to what we touched on earlier, like, I think they were actually pretty disciplined about not, you know, giving BT a magical emotion chip.
Yeah.
because there were times where you can, weirdly, there's like dialogue choices in this game. And you can like kind of be a smart ass to BT, but he doesn't really understand sarcasm. there was one where, there was such a great moment where BT was like, well, you know, pilot, we need to get over to that other, you know, fucking communications array or something. It's like, your jump jets will function well if I throw you. And he's like, throw me.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And so he just puts his hand out and like...
That first yeah. scene. Yeah, I think that's great actually because the Cooper's entire arc is told in throwing scenes because I think there's exactly three scenes.
Yeah.
And the first one, it's like, what? I've never been thrown before. This is terrifying. And it's really cool. Mm. And then like one of the last ones, and I think at this point, like BT's all busted and stuff. Mm. And you're like, I got to go do my fucking job.
Yeah.
Like, toss me.
Yeah.
And you're like Gimli from Lord of the Rings or whatever. But it feels badass because you feel like not only have I been tossed before, but I'm ready. Like I know that I'm a skilled pilot because I've been through this entire campaign and I feel great and I feel like I can rock this. And to have that feeling in that tossing scene with Cooper is just really satisfying.
In that scene, Cooper said something like, just like last time, right, BT? And BT was like, incorrect. We are on a moving vehicle, throwing you to another moving vehicle. There are considerably more variables.
Yeah, you are far more likely to die in this one. Like, honestly, Cooper, I think you are fucked.
There's just because there is this kind of like, you know, quasi biotic link between them. Like his brain is getting more and more adept at controlling the Titan. There's something that keeps BT going, which is like, he will go with logic, you know, throughout the entire thing. And so when they get to that point of like they were going to separate Cooper and BT, BT still sticks up for Cooper, but not in a way that's out of character for BT because he just chooses the logical route, which is like, hey, we have a plus 90% rate, which is like best of class and even the best of pilots.
Right.
So like, why separate us?
Totally,
it wasn't like, I love him.
I love him.
Yeah.
Marry me, Cooper. Coop. Can I call you Coop?
I think, and there's just a lot of things like, the game looks great, and I think they do a lot, especially during the single player of like, you know, there are scenes where Cooper's just riding on BT, or they're walking together and not just piloting, which gives you that more humanistic angle to it.
And the scenes where you are separated from BT, and then shit hits the fan, and BT shows up.
Yeah.
I feel like they have that transition locked down.
Yeah.
It just feels so good
to
make that running dash through enemy fire to jump in your Titan and then just be like, I'm ready.
Yep.
And BT says every time it's like transferring control to pilot. And you're like, yes, it's time to like kick some ass now. Although at some point you have to think, like, why not just have BT on autopilot all the time? He's perfectly fine.
Well, in the lore, George, there's these battle chips that make them easier to on their own. Well,
and even the final scene where, like, Cooper's like, we both go down together kind of thing. And BT's like, well, no. I mean, I'm a robot, so fuck you. Yeah. You know, like, it cuts the dramatic edge a little bit, not having him be completely, like, a sentient AI.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like he's a soul of the previous pilot stuck inside BT, which genuinely they could have done.
Yeah.
Instead, it's this more like robot. It's almost more like a man and his dog instead of a man and his best friend.
Well, and I think it's, they don't really go into this as much as they could, but it's more about, like, kind of humans finding humanity in other things, you know, like humanizing machines. And it's like, well, he's not, but this is more of a story about what the people do in this universe and like how they interact with their technology.
I mean, even the narration at the end of the game, which is a little hokey and totally unnecessary, I think, but Cooper's like, yeah, man, it felt really bad to like not have BT, but you know, whatever.
I guess we'll get a new pilot. Yeah, he was like, I wonder how that will feel. Like, because like BT is still like kind of linked to him or whatever.
That's true, psychologically.
There was some really cool, and like because of that, you feel bad, like, you know, when you were, like when BT gets grabbed by the crane, it's like, no, like, I have to go find him.
And he's like fighting the crane off as well.
Yeah, and it's just funny because BT's personality also has a bunch of like these computer-isms in it, where it was like, you know, what was it, like,
it was like attempting escape number 360
attempt escape number 387 failed, retrying.
What's great is it loads a new map, so you have to wait, and when he comes back he's like 300 attempts later. Pretty good.
And then there was that when you were fighting the one of the bosses with the flying Titan.
That was tough. That was the hardest
part. When like BT gets his arm ripped off and like he's still fighting or whatever, and he's still like ripping open the hatch to like put you down into it to like get the plane under control. So I'm interested in your opinion on this. At the end, when they're basically torturing BT, and
That's weird, huh?
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
You can't really torture an AI.
Well, it was weird because they were playing the human and the Titan against each other, it was like, well, one of, you know, BT has like the three laws of robotics or whatever, and like the third one is like protect the pilot at all costs. And so they're going to, well, hey, BT, we're going to kill your pilot unless you give me, you know, the MacGuffin.
Not the MacGuffin.
Yeah. At the end where, you know, BT is dead, well, you think he's dead, but he kind of gives his like brain core or whatever to you. And inside the core, there's a knife and there's the fucking smart pistol.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, man.
That was so fan service. Yes,
it was.
Yeah. But then you're running and you're just like smart pistol blasting like everyone around you.
But it was also just like, I didn't know if it was fan service or just like the greatest fuck you to all of the like Titanfall fanboys who were like, "Ooh, smart pistol, OP or whatever." Easy, but it was
it
like
both.
So it was like the dramatic, like, you know, apex of the game was you carrying the smart pistol, just like ruining dozens of guys.
It's like, to be fair, like the ship is going down at this point, I think, and so like everyone's not really paying attention. But
it was just great. Like there was,
well, and this was cool is the smart pistol let you traverse that environment faster.
Yeah.
Than you could any other environment almost up to that point.
Yeah.
So you went through this huge level very, very quickly with the smart pistol, which, again, just creates that sense of flow really well.
It was kind of like the moment in the Tomb Raider reboot where she gets her pistol or whatever. And I was like, why didn't they give her two? You know, why didn't she just, like, pull out the double pistol and start going? Like, that's the fan service. And it's like, okay, well, like, even though the Titanfall lore is only relevant to like nerds who really like Titanfall, like seeing the knife and the smart pistol combo was amazing.
The knife hacking tool, I think, is so funny. They still need that shit, Mr. Robot.
It was just great. And it was like, well, I don't know if this will ever appear ever again in the game, but this is the exact right moment to make it appear. It was like the play of last resort for them, where it's like, we're never going to use a smart pistol unless your Titan is like destroyed, basically, in which case you bust out the smart pistol.
Yeah, that's so good. So out of curiosity, Apparently, Titanfall 2 hasn't done that well.
Yeah.
In sales-wise.
Yeah.
Along with, like, I think Dishonored 2 and maybe a couple other games. Yeah. What do you think? Like, do you think there's a significant reason why this particular title isn't selling?
I don't know. Like, maybe the fact that Overwatch is ruining everything.
That's one theory I heard, yeah. Like, people are just playing these, like, ever-living games. Like
Overwatch. I mean, it also was released in between Battlefield and Call of Duty.
Yeah, the timing was probably not great.
And even so, it's probably the best timing.
You don't think if this had come out in March, people would have glommed onto this better?
I don't know. I mean, well, the other thing is, like, EA... Well, I guess they have the Battlefield. I don't know. It's weird because it's so crowded. Like, this year... Also, like, Gears came out. So, like, there's another shooter that people are looking at. It's... Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it doesn't have a franchise... You know, like, it's not, like, the next Call of Duty, so, like...
Sure, yeah. But it is very widely known, you know? I mean, a lot of people knew about Titanfall, even if they didn't play it.
Right.
And I don't think the issue with the first Titanfall was that people didn't pick it up. It's that they just didn't stick around.
Yeah, it's... I don't know what it is. Because people still... I don't know, actually, if this is the case or not. People are definitely stuck around with Overwatch. It seems like people still prestige one or two times in Modern War or in Call of Duty.
Yeah.
I don't know what the deal is because, well, actually, we'll talk about this on the site in a week or two. But, like, this game, mechanically speaking, is so much more appealing to me than any Call of Duty. Yeah. Like, even the Advanced Warfare, where you had, like, the little mini boost and the wall running, this is so much faster, so much more fluid, so much more dynamic. Like, this is a better game than Call of Duty by almost any measure.
Right.
Unless you like the aesthetic trappings of Call of Duty franchise.
The Call of Duty's aesthetic trappings are like they're in space now.
I know. And now like they're starting to converge and it's like, well, guys, there's this great game.
Why worry about like the moon when you could be on, what is it, fucking Pandora?
Yeah. Yeah.
I see Harmony. You, Cooper.
Yeah. Harmony.
Harmony, that's right.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe there's just a lot of first person shooters out there.
Yeah, it's really weird to be coming from a place where the first game had no campaign.
Yeah.
And it was still great. And this one, I'm like imploring people to play Titanfall 2 because of that campaign.
Yeah.
It's pretty weird.
It is.
And it's not a long campaign either. No. So I think it's potentially kind of difficult to sell that as a selling point when it's like, are you really going to throw 60 bones for a game that you can beat in about 5 hours?
Yeah.
And then you can play the multiplayer, but we know that your multiplayer time is being taken up with these ever-living games like Overwatch or Call of Duty or Battlefield or fucking GTA Online. Like, there's many, many online games that people spend quite a bit of time in.
Yeah. It's super crowded, I guess, is my guess. And if it's crowded, then you have to have name recognition or else it's going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, overall, like, I still think this is, like, it will be another, like, critical darling if everyone feels the same way as about it as we do, but...
We just hope it still pays the bills over there at Respawn.
I mean, they're making noise about, hey, we're gonna... EA's making noise about, oh, you know, Titanfall is a long-running franchise, and, like, if the rumors that I hear about Call of Duty are true, maybe that is a good long game. Like, I hear this Call of Duty is, like... Call of Duty has peaked, it sounds like.
Sure.
And so if you're ever going to do a thing where you actually try to nudge it off...
Now's the time.
Yeah, now's the time to do it. And like Battlefield... Yeah. EA has Battlefield 1 and Titanfall. And so now they have basically Battlefield and Titanfall as two things that they can make a sequel of at any time.
Yeah.
And so like maybe that's... so they're guarding whether Call of Duty continues to go into the future. They can battle it with Titan just like they're clicking. Yeah. And if they click back to the past, if Call of Duty decides to reboot, they can be like, nah, 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 Battlefield 1.
Yeah, it's the financial Ikaruga.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Oh man. Anyway, Titanfall 2 is great.
Yeah, great game.
You should play it. All right, experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. We're coming up on gamiest time, and already...
Oh, yeah.
BT for Husbandu of the year.
Front runner like, right now.
I think it's... I mean, I wouldn't go so far.
He's not a lock yet.
To be honest, I think that the Husbandu waifu selection for the gamies this year
is some of the
most heated.
Yeah.
We're looking at the Firekeeper from Dark Souls 3.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, and you know? There are many out there. It's going to, that might be probably the most heated match.
I think it might be the most heated match.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing that in December. Yep. If there's like a crazy, wacky game category that you want us to discuss this year, let us know.
Yep. Drop us a line. Until next time, everyone, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
BT out. Every time we